Welcome to JourneyWithJesus.net, a weekly webzine for the global church. I'm Daniel B. Clendenin. My essay this week is called Food, the Kingdom of God, and a Texas Street Wedding. It's based upon the lectionary readings for Sunday, September the 1st, 2013. Earlier this past summer, I read three books about food. Salt, Sugar, Fat by Michael Moss, The American Way of Eating by Tracy McMillan, and then Eating Animals by Jonathan Foer. All three books make a similar point. Food is about a lot more than nutrition. Moss reads like a cultural history of baby boomers with his discussions of Tang and Oreos. Foer is a commentary on capitalism taken to its logical extremes. Factory farms that produce 99% of the meat we eat. McMillan does undercover investigative journalism. Food ecology is important, but so is a food ethic. There's more to food than buying organic or going vegan. What you eat, how and where it's produced, and who you eat with all say something about your identity and community. In her review of the book Feast, A History of Grand Eating, Ingrid Rowland notes how throughout history food has been the all-sufficient metaphor of power. In fact, that's a distinctly biblical idea. Food plays a conspicuous role in the Bible. Jews celebrate liberation from Egypt with the Passover meal. Many of their 613 mitzvot or commandments deal with dietary guidelines. Jesus' first miracle was to turn water into wine at a wedding party. The Gospels speak of the Last Supper, the Lord's Supper, and the Great Supper, all material signs that signify spiritual realities. There are stories about the feeding of the multitudes, eating with dirty utensils, farming, fasting, which foods are ritually clean or unclean and why, whether a believer could eat meat that had been sacrificed to pagan idols and then afterwards sold in the local market, and the poor begging crumbs from the rich. Luke's gospel for this week is only one of several stories that Jesus told in which food is a metaphor for power that builds or destroys human community. Jesus often ate with fringe people, so much so that his detractors disparaged him as a glutton and a drunkard. For the religiously scrupulous person of his day, to eat with a dirty person defiled you and made you impure before both God and humanity. But Jesus also ate with religiously zealous and socially powerful people. That's where we find him in this week's gospel. When Jesus was eating dinner with a prominent Pharisee, he noticed something about the guests and some things about the hosts. The guests at the party clamored for places of honor at the table. To insinuate ourselves into places of importance, to wheedle a prestigious invitation, to be seen at the right eatery with the right people, all these behaviors are what we're inclined to do. It's entirely human. When I was in Oxford in the fall of 2002, I attended the beautiful service called Evensong almost every night. On my first night at Magdalen College, founded in 1448, I learned an important lesson. Don't even think about sitting in the back row reserved for professors. Those are prestigious seats for important people. And never mind that the church was empty, except for the boys' choir and a few tourists like me. Whether it's sitting in the skybox at a football game or at courtside at a basketball game, We confuse a powerful social location with an authentic personal identity. Just as school children long to demonstrate through their bag lunches that they are okay, adults try to demonstrate by their social location that they're important and powerful. And so Jesus warned the dinner guests, "Be careful where you sit. It might reveal more about yourself than you think." Jesus then turned from the guests to the hosts. He commented on what we might call the law of reciprocity. When you host a dinner party, you invite people whom you most enjoy, those whose presence in your house might flatter you. "In fact," said Jesus, "there's a decent chance these people will reciprocate and invite you to their party," which of course is exactly what we hope. But with the hosts, Jesus also turned the tables. Instead of those whom we would most likely invite, your friends, your brothers or relatives, or your rich neighbors, Jesus challenges us to host those whom we would least likely invite, the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. And so just as he had warned the guests, Jesus warned the hosts, "Be careful about your invitation list. Like your seating preferences, it says something about your deepest identity." Jesus warned both guests and hosts, "Everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Commenting on this gospel text from Luke, William Willimon, former professor and dean of the chapel at Duke University for almost 30 years, observed, "There is a warning here about the advent of a kingdom where those who are full and content and on top get dislodged." When my friend's daughter Lisa got married, they wanted to invite their entire church, but budgetary constraints prohibited that. Instead, after the service, they had the local police block off the main street in downtown Waco, Texas. Guests danced in the streets and enjoyed refreshments from a Baskin-Robbins ice cream cart. The gazebo in the park next to the theater sheltered the wedding cake. Lisa's husband, Chris, had made friends with a number of homeless men who lived under a bridge. As a pastor, Chris had employed them for odd jobs at his church. Coyote, who was the leader of these homeless friends, attended the wedding in his standard attire of jeans with holes in the knees, a scraggly beard, and unwashed hair. He organized his friends to clean up the streets after the wedding, then sat on the curb with a big smile and smoked a cigar. Another guest was Lisa's next-door African-American neighbor. The little girl loved to spend time with Lisa and really wanted to come to the wedding. So the mother, the daughter, and the grandfather all came. The 70-year-old grandfather was soon the center of attraction as he went out on the street and danced to the music. Soon the college girls were vying to dance with him. As passersby strolled by and inquired about what was happening, they too were invited to the wedding feast. There were guests dressed in their nicest clothes alongside guests who wouldn't feel at home at a formal occasion. However they dressed, every person felt welcomed as an honored guest, just as God Himself welcomes us to Himself and invites us to welcome each other. For books this week, I review Tracy McMillan, The American Way of Eating, New York, Scribner's, 2012, 319 pages. Tracy McMillan is no food snob. She grew up near Flint, Michigan. Since her mother was an invalid, her dad did his best with the cooking, And Macmillan isn't ashamed to say that Tuna Helper was one of her favorites. As she grew older, she began to think about a glaring paradox of plenty in American eating. To eat a healthy diet has become expensive, time-consuming, and difficult, whereas to eat a bad diet has become cheap and easy. Our agricultural is abundant, but healthy diets are not. To explore this conundrum, Macmillan went underground as an investigative journalist to learn how America grows, sells, and eats its foods. She spent 2 months each in 3 different jobs. In California, she worked with migrant workers to pick grapes, sort peaches, and cut garlic. In Michigan, she worked at 2 Walmarts on the overnight shift, stocking shelves and in the fresh produce section. And in Brooklyn, she worked as an expediter at an Applebee's restaurant. She freely admits that this was an artificial rather than an authentic experience, but nonetheless, in each job, she lived and ate off the wages she earned, paying rent and buying groceries as if it were, in fact, her real life. Her story is mildly schizophrenic. Sometimes she focuses on the workers, who in these jobs are underpaid, cheated, work in unsafe places, and enjoy little training or benefits. And the bad thing about these jobs is that they are probably good jobs for unskilled people who are a sort of permanent underclass. At other times, the focus is on the food, how it's grown, shipped, processed, and eaten. Walmart, for example, is now the largest grocer in the world and largest employer in the U.S. It sells twice as much food as its next 3 competitors combined. In farmers' markets, well, they sell about 1% of the food that we buy. A small minority of Americans can buy heirloom tomatoes at Whole Foods and read books by Michael Pollan. Macmillan shows that most Americans, though, are trapped in a system of food deserts and processed foods that makes it hard to eat healthy. Her book brings to mind the recent movie about American hunger called A Place at the Table, and similar books of investigative journalism like Working in the Shadows, A Year of Doing the Jobs Most Americans Won't Do by Gabriel Thompson, and the book Nickel and Dimed, on Not Getting By in America by Barbara Ehrenreich. America boasts that it's the largest food producer in the world, but many, if not most of its citizens, enjoy few benefits from this distinction. Tracy Macmillan, The American Way of Eating. For movies this week, I review a title called We Steal Secrets, The Story of WikiLeaks, 2013. Is Julian Assange a hero or an enemy of the state? You can watch this documentary and decide for yourself, for it shows the good, the bad, and the ugly about the Australian hacker turned media rock star turned wanted man. On The Colbert Show, film director Alex Gibney said that he could not interview Assange for the movie because he asked to be paid. WikiLeaks is an electronic Dropbox where anyone can deposit material with a guarantee of anonymity and untraceability. Plus, the website always lists its most wanted leaks. The Bradley Manning case, the largest security breach in history, went to trial just as this film was released this past June. And within a day or so of that, news stories revealed America's vast surveillance system of the phone and internet activity of all its citizens. Since June 19, 2012, Assange has been inside the Ecuador embassy in London, where he has since been granted diplomatic asylum. He fears extradition to the United States or Sweden. We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks. And finally, for poetry this week, we continue our series of Celtic poems and prayers. It's actually a little bit longer, but it's a beautiful prayer called I Am Giving Thee Worship with My Whole Life. I believe, O God of all gods, that thou art the eternal Father of life. I believe, O God of gods, that thou art the eternal Father of love. I believe, O God of gods, that thou art the eternal Father of the saints. I believe, O God of all gods, that thou art the eternal Father of each one. I believe, O God of all gods, that thou art the eternal Father of all humanity. I believe, O God of gods, that thou art the eternal Father of the world. I believe, O Lord and God of the peoples, that thou art the creator of the high heavens, that thou art the creator of the skies above, that thou art the creator of the oceans below. I believe, O God and Lord of the peoples, that thou art he who created my soul and set its warp, who created my body from dust and from ashes, who gave to my body breath and to my soul its possession. Father, bless to me my body. Father, bless to me my soul. Father, bless to me my life. Father, bless to me my belief. Father, eternal and Lord of the peoples, I believe that thou hast redeemed my soul in the spirit of healing, that thou gavest thy Son in covenant for me, that thou hast purchased my soul with the precious blood of thy Son. Father, eternal and Lord of life, I believe that thou didst pour on me the spirit of grace at the bestowal of baptism. Father, eternal and Lord of humanity, enwrap thou my body and my soul, beloved. Safeguard me this night in the sanctuary of thy love. Shelter me this night in the shelter of the saints. Thou hast brought me up from last night to the gracious light of this day, great joy to provide for my soul, and to do excelling good to me. Thanks be to thee, Jesus Christ, for the many gifts thou hast bestowed on me, each day and night, each sea and land, each weather fair, each calm, each wild. I am giving thee worship with my whole life. I am giving thee assent with my whole power. I am giving thee praise with my whole tongue. I am giving thee honor with my whole utterance. I am giving thee reverence with my whole understanding. I am giving thee offering with my whole thought. I am giving thee praise with my whole fervor. I am giving thee humility in the blood of the Lamb. I am giving thee love with my whole devotion. I am giving thee kneeling with my whole desire. I am giving thee love with my whole heart. I am giving thee affection with my whole sense. I am giving thee my existence with my whole mind. I am giving thee my soul, O God of all gods. My thought, my deed, my word, my will, my understanding, my intellect, my way, my state. I am beseeching thee to keep me from ill, to keep me from hurt, to keep me from harm, to keep me from mischance, to keep me from grief, to keep me this night in the nearness of thy love. May God shield me. May God fill me. May God keep me. May God watch me. May God bring me to the land of peace, to the country of the King, to the peace of eternity. Praise to the Father, praise to the Son, praise to the Spirit, the three in one. Thank you for joining us at journeywithjesus.net for Sunday, September the 1st, 2013. I'm Daniel B. Clendenin.